Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that number one top polled co-host for any podcast ever, Kyle Kraust.
Wow, I didn't even know I was in a poll. Thank you.
I voted myself and then closed it. So you win.
Wow. Thank you. I will gratefully accept this award. I'd like to thank everybody who voted for me.
You're welcome.
And everybody who got me to this point of being the best co-host ever in the history of all time.
You're also welcome.
And myself for being myself, I guess. Thanks, me, for being you. I mean, me. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Let's carry on. Let's continue with the show, sir.
I don't know. I think I might steal that line. Thank you, me, for being you. I like that. So what have you been up to, sir?
Man. I wish I had something, you know, fun to report. Like, I've been doing fun things, but, you know, it's been busy. things are very busy. So I'm gearing up for this upcoming... Well, as we record this, it would be the upcoming Memorial Day weekend.
Yep.
You'll be listening to this on Memorial Day, possibly, unless you are listening past that, in which case, hello, future people. I hope you're having fun in the future, where future things are happening. So how you doing, Ian?
I'm doing all right. I finally got to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Ah, did you enjoy it?
I did. It is better than the first one.
I would agree, actually.
I mean, to be fair, the first one did all the legwork setting everything up.
Yeah.
But 2 takes that ball and just runs with it.
Yes.
And I was surprised by the amount of consequence the film had compared to a lot of other Marvel films. Because a lot of them return to some kind of status quo. And Guardians of the Galaxy didn't. It really forged, it was the next chapter in their story and was not afraid to burn some bridges. And I really respect that.
Yeah, it definitely did a good job of kind of moving the characters forward. And I think the characters are where the movie really shines. Their characters and their interactions with each other. That's what I enjoyed most about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also Stan Lee cameos. Those are always fun. Especially when now they're actually being worked into the plot, which is hilarious.
As long as it remains that kind of worked into the plot, you know, kind of on the fringe as a perpetual in-joke, I don't want it to get any more involved than that.
I don't expect that it will. I think it will just remain kind of a very periphery thing. But it's still kind of nice to see that there's actually a reason why this one guy keeps showing up everywhere, in every movie.
And it's not just because he sells himself very well.
Well, yeah, and also he's, you know, the creator of some of these characters.
At least.
In a sense, for some of them. Not all of
but
them.
But it's still a fairly fresh movie, and we can get into it more in depth another time. Just footing that out there. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it. It's fun.
Yes, especially if you enjoyed the first one. Definitely go check this one out. It is a very... I do like how the Guardians movies are kind of standalone. Mm-hmm. You don't really need much else to know much else. You can kind of follow the through lines just between those two movies and... You don't have to worry about the overall universe. The director, James Gunn, has said that he kind of wants to keep it a little bit self-contained. Despite being part of a larger universe, it's still a... You know, it keeps itself quite distant from the main story that's been through the Avengers movie arcs so far.
And I also would recommend seeing it in theaters, not waiting for the rental, because some of the scenes, you really do need to see the spectacle on a big screen.
It does look really good. Yeah, it does.
Unless you're, you know, one of those people that has a TV the size of a wall, in which case I guess you could wait.
You could wait. Yeah, you can watch it at home then, but yeah. No, it's definitely a theater-worthy movie.
So, all that aside, let's move on to the Bumble Raffle. It is our contest every show where some lucky person gets a autographed comic from me. We are down to the last two copies that will be mailed out before we move on to the new prize pack. So, it's a little exciting.
Oh.
This episode's winner is...
Deus Miles.
Congratulations, Deus Miles. We'll be in contact with you to find out where we're sending off that book. If you are jealous of Deus Miles, and why wouldn't you be? You can enter into the Bumble Raffle either by emailing us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You have to enter into every drawing individually, unless you're a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, and then you're entered into every single drawing automatically. Everyone has the same chances, but it saves you a little bit of time and hassle if you're a patron.
Yes.
So moving on into our main topic, a few weeks ago, or I guess days, months, who knows, I ran a for fun poll over on Twitter at my Twitter account, at IanFlynnBKC, to decide what was the best Sonic Universe arc ever.
Did you find out?
According to Twitter, yes.
Okay.
Is especially interesting towards the last few polls where I would get 50-50 results, except it would be an odd number of votes.
Okay.
Not quite sure how the math works on that, so had to redo the last little bit. But as that was running, folks were asking, well, what do you think it is, Ian? And I said, well, you know, let's have everyone else vote first so that my opinion doesn't sway things, and we'll discuss the results. So it wasn't really like any in-depth brackets here. I just kind of went in order and threw it all together. So I'm sure there is a more definitive way people could approach it. But this was just for funsies. One few of the stipulations I had was I did not include Worlds Collide or Worlds Unite, since those were cross-title stories. And if you took just the Sonic Universe issues out of that, it wouldn't really be an arc.
Right.
There were also three odd standalone issues. Universe number 45, which was the Sonic and Sega All-Star Racers Transformed tie-in. Sonic Universe 50, which was the Shard Metal Sonic fight. And Sonic Universe number 75, which was the Sonic Silver Metal Sonic fight. And since that's almost a full arc of four issues, I counted that as a kind of bundle arc by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So let's run down the bracket, and we'll discuss what we would vote for and see how it comes out.
All right, let's do it.
So bracket number one, we had the Shadow Saga, which was the first four issues, four individual stories about Shadow and Team Dark. Arc number two was Mobius 30 Years Later, which was my direct continuation of what was established in Mobius 25 Years Later. The Knuckles Saga, Knuckles Returns, which was Knuckles, Julie Sue, and Mighty meeting the Down Under Freedom Fighters and dealing with Dr. Finitivus. And number four is Journey to the East, where Sonic, Tails, Sally, and Monkey Khan go to unify the four houses that had aligned with the Iron Dominion. So of those four, Kyle, which would you pick as the best?
The last one you mentioned.
Journey to the East?
Yes, yes, that one. Because it introduced... the four houses, which I always like that, and the Iron Dominion. Although, Iron Dominion was before introduced before that, weren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. But it did also introduce Conquering Storm, if I remember correctly.
It did.
Yes.
Well, she appeared earlier on, but this arc gave her the most insight into her characterization.
Right. Yeah. This was like her real debut, in a sense. So I would vote for that one. What about you?
I'm going to have to go with Knuckles for a few reasons. Number one, because Knuckles is my boy. He has always been my favorite. And while there were a ton of good moments in the Shadow arc, the Shadow Omega Gamma story came out perfectly in my mind. That was exactly what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The cathartic conflict, I should say, climax between Finitivus and Knuckles as they duel on Angel Island, each reciting their own versions of T'Call's prayer, was something that I had wanted to tell more than anything else, because so much of it had been on the fringe and hinted at and danced around. And here we had Knuckles finally getting some closure and some comeuppance. He finally got his due. Fenitivus offers him anything he wants. And Knuckles says, I want my father back. I want the respect of my people back. And I want you off my island. It was when the pages were coming in, I just got so excited, especially when he's slugging him off the edge of that island.
Yeah.
That made me happy. I forgot
about that.
Oh, that's such a good
one. Okay. That's okay. Maybe I'll put that as like a tie. I don't know.
Another question I got was, which one do you think is the least successful of them? And again, I didn't put my opinion out there. I didn't want to color the results. Of the four, I got to say Mobius 30 Years Later was the most lacking of those four, and probably of the entire universe run. And I blame it entirely on my desire to be true to the continuity, to steadfastly honor everything that came before. Good, bad, short, long, I wanted this to be, you know, the ongoing book. I didn't want to be seen as the usurper who just forced my will upon the Sonic book. In retrospect, it would have been better to do something new, something different, to look at other avenues. It was also a nightmare getting approved start to finish. So, you know what? That one's gone. It's tucked into bed. It won't be missed.
Yeah, those. Honestly, I didn't enjoy 25 Years Later very much. So 30 Years Later, you know, your take on it was better, but still was definitely the weakest of this round.
Now, if you're listening to this and you're going, but I liked that one the best, I'm so glad you did. I'm really happy you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
I think I could have done better for you.
Oh, yeah. If you enjoyed any of these that we're slagging off on, sorry, it's not personal. We just don't like them.
Or all right.
Anything. We don't like anything.
Round number two. Oh, we love everything.
Okay.
Except things we don't. Round number two. Now, this is going to be a tough one.
Yes.
You ready for this?
Let's hear it.
We have Tails Adventure, which introduced the Battle Bird Armada.
Mm-hmm.
We have Treasure Team Tango,
mm,
which was the four-way fracas between Team Rose, Team Dark, the Babylon Rogues, and the Hooligans.
Oh, man.
The Silver Saga, which is where he goes to Dark Mobius and faces Dark Enerjack. And Scourge Lockdown, which was Scourge in Zone Jail and the four biographies on the Destructix.
When he goes to Dark Mobius, when you say the Silver Saga, where he goes to Dark Mobius and faces off against, what'd you say, Dark?
Dark Enerjack.
Dark Enerjack. I'm just like, comic books! Just that description, it sounded like it was like very comic booky. Just like, oh man, if I didn't know better, I think that was like the cheesiest, silliest arc ever.
Oh, there's some cheese there, I'm sure.
Well, it's Sonic, so it's a little, there's some cheese there. There's sure, it comes sure with the territory, but you know, it's still like Dark Mobius, Dark Energy.
Now, those aren't, like, the official names. Those are kind of what the fandom came up with.
Okay.
That's kind of become the accepted terms for them, so I'll just run with it.
Okay. It's still funny. I don't know. I'm just looking at it like it's very 90s. Anyway, what was your favorite arc there?
I really have a hard time picking, because with Scourge, it was the first time the Destructix actually had any real meat to their characters.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Silver Saga has a special place in my heart because I got to play around with some really obscure plot trivia, and Tracy Yardley's design for Dark Enerjack was so metal. Like, I didn't really even have a solid idea for it. I'm like, go for, you know, regular Enerjack is kind of Egyptian, kind of old mummy-ish. Let's go for kind of a machine god. And he's like, okay, how about this? And I'm like, oh! Tails Adventure came together really well. It was a nice character piece with Bunny and Antoine specifically, and the Battlebird Armada really took off. But I think I got to give it to Treasure Team Tango, because that was just fun, start to finish.
Yes. That is my pick, too. Treasure Team Tango. Blaze's... I've always liked Blaze, for some reason. She just has that very... Like, teaming her up with Amy and Cream, she's kind of like a no-nonsense character. She don't take, she doesn't take crap. But you team her up with, you know, Amy and Cream, who are kind of a little bit more fun, a little bit more lighthearted. And it just works, to be honest. Works really well. So, I definitely enjoyed that one, too.
And if I recall correctly, that's the first time we see Knackby and Embark together as the Hooligans.
I think so, yes. And I do like the Hooligans. The Hooligans are a lot of fun.
And I don't know if the name the Hooligans has, you know, made it into official canon, but the fact that they seem to be grouped together as wanted criminals within the games now is, like, it still puts a big smile on my face. So.
It makes sense. It makes
perfect. So we're going with Treasure Team Tango.
Yes.
All right, round number three. We have Tracy Yardley's debut writing for the series with Babylon Rising, which is a loose adaptation of the Sonic Riders series. Scrambled, which was the Eggman arc where he goes to war with Snively. Secret Freedom Fighters, where Elias puts together his own secret team with Silver, Larry Lynx, and Lita and Lyco. And I think this is the first time Shard really shows up.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. And finally, Chaotix Quest, where the Chaotix go looking for Mighty. They make their way through Rob of the Hedges' team and wind up confronting Jack and the Sandblasters.
I'm going to go with the Chaotix one.
Okay. What was that? Any particular reason why?
Because I love the Chaotix. I'll be honest with you. I do... I've always liked them for some reason. They've always just appealed to me. And I like Mighty a lot, so...
Mm-hmm.
But my memory is kind of hazy on it. Did Mighty play a big role in that eventually, or...?
He did, because that's where we find out that his little sister Matilda
was
legionized.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah. Yep, that one
for
me.
And she takes a missile for him, and then he kind of loses it.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. No, that would be mine. I've always just... I'd like the Chaotix in their adventures, so that would be why. How about you?
As much as a standout hit as Matilda and the Baron were, as much as I enjoy Mighty and the Chaotix, as much as Tracy's approach to the Babylon Rogue story was so elegantly streamlined, I was jealous when I saw the plot breakdowns. I'm like, okay, so I had this all mapped out for like a year, and you managed to do it in four issues. You are brilliant. And he had some fantastic cover work on that arc too. Just, oh, start to finish, great arc. But I think I'm going to have to go with Scrambled, because Eggman unleashing his master plan never gets old.
That's true. I do love me some Eggman. He is a supremely fun character under your pen. He's a lot of fun.
Start to finish, you get to have the bad guy win, and that's just fun.
That's true. I mean, sure, he has to be fighting another bad guy in order to do it, but still.
All right, so round four, we've got Tracy's other arc, Pirate Plunder Panic, the spiritual successor to Treasure Team Tango.
Mm-hmm.
Where Amy and Cream help Blaze fight off a number of robot pirates, including the absolutely fantastic Captain Metal. Shadowfall, the arc that introduced Eclipse the Darkling and has Shadow and Team Dark destroy the last remains of the Black Arms. The Great Chaotix Caper, where the Chaotix and Knuckles find Chip and battle it out with Team Hooligan. And Total Eclipse, the third part of the Dark Trilogy, where Shadow and Knuckles end up fighting over the Master Emerald, and Eclipse nearly gets away with murder.
Well, I think the only correct answer for this one is Pirate Plunder Panic, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's a great arc.
It is. It also had the unenviable position of reintroducing things after the first major crossover and finding where it fit in the continuity.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. But I think it worked out. It's pretty well self-contained because it's on Blaze's world, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, at least off on its own, after the crossover. So it's not quite immediately affected by it, I suppose. I don't know.
It's kind of hazy with the timey-wimey wibbly-wobbly.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. But it works out. I do like the covers for it, though. The covers are awesome. And, you know, Blaze is there. Marine is fun, actually. I like Marine in this, at least in this arc. I know, I don't know what the official feelings on her are from anybody, but, you know, I thought she was kind of fun. I know some people kind of hate her, I guess, but I thought she was fun in this arc anyway, so. And you got Bark and Bean back, so that's always a good time.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Ian?
I'm going to have to wuss out and say I can't pick.
Really?
Because there's all the reasons you named for Pirate Plunder Panic plus Captain Metal.
Captain Metal. Okay. I couldn't think of his name. I couldn't think of his name, so I was like, okay, I'll just have dance around that one. But yes, thank you for reminding me. Captain Metal's great.
Shadowfall will always have a place in my heart because Eclipse the Darkling was a big gamble for a character. We put a lot of effort into making him work, and he was generally accepted. Mm-hmm. So that's a large point of pride for me. Chaotix Caper, while maybe not the most amazing story out of all of them, I blundered into something that the internet caught on, where the first issue, if you read it in a certain order, is basically the lyrics to Pumpkin Hill.
Wait a minute. Really?
Yeah, somebody went page by page, panel by panel, and put it to the lyrics, and it fit almost like I meant to do it.
Huh.
I don't know. Maybe because the first time I tried Pumpkin Hill, it took me a half hour to find all the freaking shards, so it got ingrained in my brain. I don't know.
It's a good song.
After that, they go into Aquatic Mine, and I realized that, once again, pretty much everything in that issue synced up to the lyrics, except I was missing a burning skull. So I shot an email to Tracy as he was drawing it saying, look, here's the reference. Just draw one of those weird torch skulls, and we have it. We've done it. And so he did.
The ghost tried to look at him and got leery?
Exactly. Exactly.
Or got Larry, whoever Larry is. I'm not sure.
And then Total Eclipse has, it's the culmination of those two stories. It's got a nice big fight between Shadow and Knuckles, which is something I've wanted to see ever since Sonic X opened me up to the idea. So
yeah,
I can't pick. They all have something really special for me. So I'm just going to have to let you win on that one.
Yay, I win. What do I win?
The ability to move on to the next round, which is
excellent.
Aaliyah Baker's debut on Sonic Universe with Spark of Life, the Sally and Nicole story focusing on Nicole's origin. Also the introduction of Dr. Elodie and Phage. The Silver Age, Evan Stanley's debut on Sonic Universe, which takes place before most of Silver's appearances in the series after the reboot. Introduced Gold, gave us more insight into Von Schlemmer, introduced the second Devourer. And Eggman's Dozen, where he rallies the Egg Bosses to get Eggman Land back from the forces of Walter and Wendy Nagas.
Yes. Now, I love all of these, but there's only one correct answer. You know what it is, Ian?
I think I know, yes.
Oh. Are you sure?
Because when I started the poll, this is what you answered with on day one.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it cross-posted to Facebook and didn't show the poll, so I didn't realize there was actually a poll attached to it. Anyway, it's Spark of Life. Of course it is.
It is.
I'm biased for two reasons. One, because it's Aaliyah's first story. And two, I am Sally Cole trash. So... That would be why. It's a good arc. It's a really good arc. It's a lot of fun. And it's, you know, it has its heartwarming moments. And it's a, you know, Sally and Nicole work really well together. So, it works. I like it a lot. How about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with you on Spark of Life. Not for any obvious biases I might have, Drykov. But no, seriously, it's Sally and Nicole have a very fun dynamic.
Yes.
This is the first time we've really been able to get deep into Nicole as a character, in her thinking and her backstory. I like grouchy old Dr. Elodie, who takes care of Badniks like some cat hoarder.
Yes. That was fun.
You might notice a running theme with me and villains. I love Phage.
Phage is cool, yes. And I do love Overclock Nicole. You kind of snuck a super form in there for a character that's not official. Mm-hmm. That's not an official, a quote-unquote official Sonic character, and I like that. I like that. That's very sly. And it was and it was Nicole, so that makes it even better, because I think we've established at this point Nicole's probably my favorite character in the book. She's fun.
Moving on to round six, the last of the regular rounds, we have Shattered, which was the Knuckles story where he teams up with Amy and later Team Dark to take on Walter Nagus. The Case of the Pirate Princess, which is the chaotic story where they find Princess Udina, who had been hinted at pretty much throughout the book since the reboot started, and came across the villainous pirates of the Shellbreaker crew. And then finally, the bits, as I mentioned earlier, Sonic Universe 45, 50, and 75.
Man, it's really hard to choose. What do you choose, Ian?
See, I'm having the same problem.
Yeah. I kind of thought so. Curse of the Pirate Princess is a really good arc, though. I do like the aquatic characters. I'm completely spacing on the name now, though, for their actual group name.
Moropians?
Moropians.
For lack of a better term.
Okay.
I mean, it's not that all Fishmobians come from Moropus.
They're not the aquatic freedom fighters.
No, they're not the 40 Fathom Freedom Fighters. No,
well, I know 40 Fathom Freedom Fighters. Those are different. Speaking of which, where's Bivalve?
Bivalve is nowhere and everywhere all at once. He's watching. Yes. Listening.
Yes. Bivalve is in your heart.
And he won't leave until he gets the ransom money.
Yes. I don't know.
I'm going to have to wuss out and say I can't pick again.
I don't know, man. I think I'm there with you. It's tough.
Because Pirate Princess is the more intricate story. It's something we built towards for a long time. We introduced a lot of fun characters. It was a fun Chaotix arc.
Yeah.
But Shattered was also a lot of fun, and we got to see the Knuckles-Amy dynamic, which you don't really get to see a lot of.
Yeah, that's the thing with Shattered, is that Knuckles and Amy just work really well together. They have surprisingly good chemistry. And so, in like a platonic way, still, but it just works. I was like really pleasantly surprised and quite enjoyed Shattered quite a lot. So it's really tough to say, because Pirate Princess is also really freaking good. So, man, I don't know. It's tough. I like them both.
So, between the two of us, just taking a very loose tally here, the standout two are Treasure Team Tango and Spark of Life.
Yes.
Neither of those actually made it to the semifinals on Twitter.
Of course not. They didn't have Shadow in them. Or Knuckles.
So, we're going to put our votes aside for the moment and look at what you on Twitter decided with the semifinals. Round one was between Shadow Saga, the first arc, which were the four individual stories, Scrambled, which was the first Eggman arc, and Shattered, which was the Knuckles-Amy arc. Mm-hmm. Of those three, which would you go with?
I'm going to say Shattered.
I think I'm going to have to stick with Scrambled.
Scrambled's good too, but I'm going to say Shattered.
And the second semifinal round had the Silver Saga, which is against Dark Interjack, Shadowfall, which is Eclipse's introduction, and Eggman's Dozen, which is all the egg bosses versus the witch carters and wizards and such.
Eggman's Dozen on that one, I would say.
I'm going to have to go with Shadowfall.
So here's the thing. My memory is just horrible. So some of these earlier arcs I'm like spacing on. Like, I know kind of the basics of kind of what happened, but it's like, man, I read that so long ago. I need to go back and read some of these, but it's just time and stuff. When I saw you were running this poll, I'm like, oh man, I'd voted more of these, but I don't remember all of the, I don't remember all the details of all the arcs, so I don't remember. I know I liked them, but I just don't remember exactly what happened in all of them. So the more recent ones I'm better at remembering, so that might be kind of coloring my voting a little bit too.
Well, we're down to our two picks, Treasure Team Tango and Spark of Life. Mm-hmm. Of those two, which one are you going to pick? Kyle, you're going to pick Spark of Life.
How do you know?
I'm shikik. I got them brain powers.
How could you make that assumption about me? I can't believe this.
I done reached through this microphone and dabbled in your brain and saw what you were going to say.
This is ridiculous. You just assume that you know these things about me?
Am I right?
I don't know how you could possibly assume that you would be correct when you're clearly extremely correct. Yes, you're right. What would you pick, Ian?
See, I'm tempted to wuss out again and not be able to pick, because, I mean, let's compare the two.
Uh-huh. So here's here's the funny thing. You did write Treasure Team Tango. Okay. Pirate Plunder Panic is the one I was thinking of. You did write Treasure Team Tango. I was just about to say you didn't write either of these, but you did write.
I had a hand in plotting Spark of Life, but most of that was Aaliyah's doing. So
yes. That's her arc.
We'll call it her arc. Between the two, they both had deeper character moments that we don't get to see a lot of. This being, you know, Sally and Nicole's interactions and Bunny and Antoine way out of their elements.
Yeah.
We had unusual heroes stepping up to the plate. Again, Nicole, you know, with her overclocked form, Tails really coming into his own as the true standout hero.
Yes.
We had the introduction of new villains, Phage, who is just an absolute delight, and the Battle Lord, who is also an absolute delight, but in a different way.
Yeah.
We have it set on remote islands, away from everything else. The only thing that doesn't really sync up is I can't really find a way to equate Dr. Elodie with Speedy, but, you know, fun side characters that are somewhat antagonistic.
Sure.
I can't pick. I can't choose.
Come on, Ian. You know the right
answer. I can't do it.
You know the right answer. You know the right answer.
I can't do it.
What kind of look are you getting from your wife right now?
I don't know. I kind of bored myself off to get the... I turned the bedroom into the recording studio, more or less.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering if she was going to be like, you know what one to pick. Anyway, yes. It's Spark of Life.
Okay. So we'll just say the unofficial Bumblecast winner of the poll is Spark of Life.
Unofficial. It's great. We're an unofficial show.
The officialness of this is so airtight.
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, it's you. You're the one who wrote these things.
As for the Twitter results, if you didn't see for some reason, the original Shadow Saga won the first four issues.
Yeah, the very first arc.
I guess is nice. You know, get it right on the first try.
Sure.
A little sad because apparently I didn't ever rise above that.
You never improved over all the years you've been writing Sonic Universe. The first one was the best.
The Shadow Saga had a lot of good moments. It gave us the Shadow Face when Marine says that
that's very
she
true.
Can't build a ship.
That's very true.
It had the Omega Gamma fight, which, like I said, played out pretty much pitch perfect. It gave us a little bit of moments with Shadow and Hope when she was still around.
Mm-hmm.
It gave us Feist, the giant panda god of the special zone. And it gave us Omega shooting a god in the face because that's what Omega does.
Omega is great. I did. Can I just,
Omega
can
is
I
so
say,
much fun.
Can I say that he is awesome? And Eggman's dozen though is a worthy second place there though, because that was the one that went up against Shadow Saga, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes, it did. Okay. Yep, it did. And yeah, it is a worthy to go up with that. So be you improved arc 1 to arc 19. Sure.
Alrighty, so that's enough patting ourselves on the back. Let's move on to the rest of the show. First off, we have sort of an ad on the show. Normally folks can buy ad space with us. But this show, we're going to give that to you, Kyle, because you have a really important thing to promote.
Yes, I do. And luckily, I don't have to pay for the ad space. Aside from that, I have to actually give you the ad myself. No, but on a more serious note, about a beginning of this month, toward the end of last month, my mother, who is a wonderful woman who I love very much, was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, which is a form of cancer in the blood and in the starting in the bone marrow. So right where blood is practically generated. She has been in the hospital for the last several weeks and underwent a pretty intense round of chemotherapy for a constant week-long drip. And luckily, she has made it through with flying colors. She's doing extremely well. And just today, on the day that we're recording this, signs seem to indicate that she no longer has leukemia. So it's been sent into remission from one round of chemo, which is awesome and amazing and delightful, because we were really worried that she'd be having to go through at least two rounds and a transplant and everything else. Now, there's possibility it could come back. There's possibility that it may not have been quite enough and that she'd have to go through it with it again, or she might need a transplant after all. But at this point, signs are looking really good. Unfortunately, now, let's get slightly political. We do live in America where medical payments are an issue. Even if you do have insurance, it can still be a bit of a pain. So if you're interested, my mom will be having medical payments to contend with after this. Thankfully, not nearly as much as many other people have to deal with, but she will be having some. So if you are feeling, a little bit of generous, if you're feeling, you want to give maybe a buck or two or however much you want to chip in, we have set up a GoFundMe site, which you can find at gofundme.com/AZTerry. That's AZTERRIE. The AZ is for Arizona, because that's where we live, and if anybody's wondering. And if you want to, chip in and show your support there, we definitely appreciate it. Or, if you just want to share that out on social media, anything like that, anything to kind of, raise awareness and raise, just spread it out amongst your friends. And if they want to give, that would be great too. So it'd be very much appreciated. And we're just looking to kind of cover the payments and stuff that she's going to have to go through for the next couple of years, as she, even though she would be in remission, she's still going to have a lot of recovery time, and they're going to be monitoring her going forward. And there's just going to be a lot of stuff going on, even though we seem to be over the worst of it. But
I mean, she beat cancer in a month. throw it a couple dollars your way so she can complete the victory lap. I mean,
less than a month, to be honest with you. Although,
you see?
Well, actually, no, not less than a month, because she was suffering a lot of symptoms at home, dealing with a lot of stuff at first before they finally made the official diagnosis. So,
point is, she's a boss. Yes. Deserves a little recognition, aside from applause.
Yes, she has fought hard and has been, you know, it's been tough. It's been really tough, but it has been, she has been held up by the strength of her family and her friends that have given her all the support in the world, which has been great. And if you feel the need or the desire to contribute anything at all, even just word of mouth, it would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Another way you can support Kyle and support the both of us is be a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast. And one of those perks is to have priority in our Q&A section at the end of every episode.
Yes, you can do that. Go head on over to patreon.com/bumblecast and do that. You can also ask questions to get on the main Q&A list, the big list of questions that we are slowly working our way through, and I think we're almost at a point where we will need more. So if you want to ask
more. There's
a light
at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, yes, we're getting there. We're getting there.
We've reached the bottom of the pile.
And we're getting there. We have enough to last for a little while longer, but if any of you out there have any burning questions, be sure to hit us up. Bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter @KyleJCRB or @IanFlynnBKC using the hashtag Bumblecast, or via our Patreon page via comments or messages there. So, are you ready to get into some priority Q&A, Ian?
I am.
Let's do it. This one comes from our good buddy Sam Cybercat.
Howdy, Sam.
If you were coming up with a villain team for a new Pokemon game, how do you think you'd go about it?
Ooh. Oh, the possibilities. I don't know. I guess it would depend on what the theme of the game is. I think it became a little more focused as the series went on, but like, let's take the best team, for example, Team Skull.
Mm-hmm.
They fit into the whole theme of the game of family and going through the trials and earning your your adulthood through those trials and facing off against the Kahunas. And the Skulls are all those who have failed at some point and have become kind of rejected from society, whether it's outright or through their own feelings of inadequacy. And they're just hilarious and adorable. So I think it would depend on what the theme of the game is, whatever the central theme is, and thus the team would be the negative side of it. Trying to think of how that would approach the other games, because with Emerald you have the whole idea of nature conservation, with Aqua and Magma being eco-terrorists, you know, taking protection to the wrong extreme. Plasma kind of approached the idea of Pokemon rights in terms of animal rights, and then it all turned out it was a big scam, and I don't know, Plasma didn't really work well for me. I know that it's Pokemon, it's not that deep, but you know, make the effort. And I'm sorely tempted to see the big resurgence of Team Rocket, because it's been teased here and there, and you know, growing up as a Gen 1-er, you kind of want to see the old boys come back.
I just want to make cool 80s cyberpunk hackers. Is that a thing? Can we do that?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, okay, cool.
I mean, we have a few digital Pokemon anyway.
Can they hack Pokemon out of their balls?
Maybe, because everything gets uploaded into a PC.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, maybe that's one thing you have to fear, is like a virus taking away your Pokemon.
No, no, it's Team Torrent. They illegally download your Pokemon.
It's perfect. Brilliant. I like it. Cut, print, ship it. Oh, man. Maybe I'm getting into Digimon territory. I don't know anything about Digimon.
You could definitely make the Digimon crowd salty if the next Pokemon game took the route of Mega Man Battle Network, where you can upload your Pokemon online and battle that way. Oh, Lord. That would be... let's move on before we get to some really angry fan territory.
I am surprised that hasn't happened yet. But anyway, next one comes from Chris A. Is there a chance for the old characters from the pre-SGW to return in the post-SGW, or for the old continuity to return in the Sonic comic series?
There is avenues that could lead to that, but no, not realistically. And I would like to elaborate, but unfortunately that's an incendiary topic for a lot of parties involved. I could be wrong. I could be very wrong, and it could be a lot easier than I think, but from what I've seen, from what I've heard, from my understanding of things, no, it's not realistically possible. It could happen. It legit could, but I don't see things falling into place as they would need to.
At this point, it really should be just hoping that the companies can reach an agreement where they can keep the comics around.
Yeah, well.
Much less delving into continuity issues. So, as we talked about on the last episode, a little bit about that.
Which we might as well address again, because people are asking this all the time.
That's true.
As of this recording, Archie and Sega are in talks about the future of the book. That's all we know. When there has been a solid development, we'll all find out together.
Yes. So, we got one more question. And I'm pretty sure this is not intended to be a priority Q&A question. But I'm going to ask it anyway. Someone comes from Andrew F. Or our good buddy, Sin Fritz. Anyone able to watch?
That was from Bumblecast Gaming Live last Friday.
Oh, man.
I screwed up setting up the video. The patrons couldn't watch it. I fixed it.
I won't
make the same mistake.
Darn, I thought you were going to give me a good joke answer.
It's hard when I am the joke answer.
No, you just said it wrong.
Also, since I'm going to be doing it, here's some time travel for you. I'm going to be doing it live tomorrow as of this recording, but all the patrons will have had already watched it by the time this episode comes out. But I keep giving them the option to watch me play something different, but no, apparently they just want me to continue on the sneaking mission. They want to see me play as not Big Boss. It's just, ugh.
They want you to keep playing as not David Hayter.
And that itself is a crime.
That truly, truly a crime. Truly. Anyway, yes. Go watch us play games, or Ian play games lately. But anyway. I've been around here and there. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into some standard Q&A, shall we? This one comes from Lord Laharl's Vassal. Would you be interested in characterizing Chaos some more, and do you think Sega would let you?
No to both. I like Chaos as a very simple creature, more element than individual. And considering that's how Sega seems to be writing him, they probably wouldn't let me go much further with him.
He's kind of a force of non-nature, I guess.
Yeah.
A force of chaos, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's kind of like, Godzilla. He's just a monster. He's just there to, be a monster. Or at least to kind of be a force to be dealt with.
Well, I mean, he's a gentle spirit that looks after the Chao and is very protective.
That's true. But when you feed him Chaos Emeralds, he turns into a giant monster that floods an entire city. So,
Well, they got better.
Okay, that's true. That's true.
Plus, he's translucent, so you can already see what he's thinking.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Next question comes from Boozalarian Theme. If Sonic were to visit Avalon in Sonic Unleashed, what do you think the local chili dog would have been?
Oh, shoot. Depends on what region of Avalon, since Avalon itself is something of a mishmash of European archetypes. And, you know, just crossing Europe, you're going to go through so many different cultures and cuisines.
Can we just say delicious? It would have been delicious.
Yeah. Maybe I mean, if you're closer to Antoine's ancestral homeland, it's probably going to be way different from something that's a little more Germanic versus something that's a little more Britannia-esque.
See, I was thinking like German, so it would be like a bratwurst with chili and onions. Something like that. Might be pretty good. I don't know. It's about all I can think of, really. And the final question we've got here from Da Big RG. How old is Styx the Jungle Badger?
Nobody knows. She does not have an official age.
Well, then.
I'm going directly off of Sonic Channel's official profile. She is not listed as anything.
She's probably around the same age as the rest. So that's it. We just don't know.
And she might be around Amy's age.
I was thinking she's about the same age as probably Amy and the rest of the... Is Sonic still 15?
I think so, yes.
Okay, so classic Sonic is 15. Modern Sonic is 15. Age just doesn't matter at this point, I guess, huh?
I mean, he turned 15 on his birthday, so he was 15 before on the official profile, so clearly he's 15. Unless you also want to count runners as canon, in which case he's 15.
Okay. And everything else has also mentioned that he's 15, so I guess he's 15? I'm not sure.
Although technically, being 25 years old, he's 15, so...
Yes, being created in 1991 makes him 15.
As I wrote in my very first issue, when Sonic had yet another birthday, he said, let's just call me a teen from now on forever.
I don't know. I've always felt
it doesn't matter what his age is. The canon really isn't airtight. As long as you don't care, we have no problem here. He's just a teen, so hey, like him, let's roll with it.
It's just a show. You should really just relax. Wait, no, that's something completely different. Anyway, we have reached the end of the Q&A, and I think we've reached the end of the show.
We have. Before we sign off, we're going to give a big shout-out to everyone who makes this show possible. Thank you so very much. You get us one step closer every day to being able to do this full-time. Big thank you to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, Chevelle S., Chris A., Damo, John B., Sam Cybercat, Deus Miles, congrats again, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell T., Samuel P., Justin G., Jennifer R., Diane W., Dawn B., Clinton H., Andrew F., Frobman, Candelicious Cartoons, John M., S. Yavardovich 9X, Alex P., and James K. You guys are switching it up on me. I've kind of gotten to an old rhythm, and I was like, oh, there's new names.
Candelicious Cartoons?
I think that was Candy for now.
I know, I figured. But I'm like, man, I got used to Candy for now.
It was fun, but Candelicious Cartoons rolls off the tongue in a fun way. It's kind of tasty.
That's true. It is Candelicious. Anyway.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 44. Join us every Friday, you patrons, for Bumblecast Gaming Live and for Bumblecast Gaming every other Monday. If you want to find out what's going on with me, head over to BumbleKing.com or on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
And you can find what I'm doing over at KyleJCRB, or head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of this show and many others, including my own solo show, Nitro Game Injection, that also streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on 8bitx.com. Also on YouTube at youtube.com/KyleJCRB, or on Facebook via Facebook Live on the KNGI Network page at facebook.com/KNGI Network. So that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Good
show. Wait, are we...
That wraps it up for us tonight. Good night, everybody!
That was awkward.
Should we do a different outro?
No. Why would we? We already did one. Why bother doing another?
So we can pretend we have some degree of professionalism.
If they've listened throughout this whole show, they know we don't have any. If they made it to the end, they know we don't have any professionalism, so why even bother trying to keep up the whole veneer of it? Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.